Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of Sea Change, a podcast dedicated to telling the stories of amazing and inspirational women who are out there changing the world one initiative at a time. I'm Annie Seelos, host of Sea Change, and also CEO of R. Seelos & Company, a financial services firm that is mission-driven around creating more opportunities for women in our industry and in our community, but also in doing all things with impact. I'm so excited about today's episode, and I can't wait to introduce you to Technovation, a global tech education nonprofit, and its founder and CEO, Tara Shklovsky. Since Tara began this journey with Technovation 15 years ago, Technovation has trained 150,000 young women to be technology entrepreneurs and innovators all over the world, and given them the tools to solve problems in their own communities. She's been recognized by Forbes, the Discovery Science Channel, and the White House, just to name a few, for her work in STEM education and advocacy for young girls. I know you'll be as inspired as I am by her limitless vision for her organization and her belief in the power of investing in girls. But also, you're going to be inspired by the stories of girls you'll hear about who participate in Technovation and how with just a little support and mentorship, they're able to come together and leave the world changed for the better, one tech solution at a time. So without further ado, welcome, Tara.
Thank you, Annie.
There's so much to talk about on this topic, but let's just start with your background and your career trajectory and how you came to found Technovation.
Thank you, Annie. I grew up in India, and India is hard. Like, you can't really escape poverty and how it's all around you, and it makes you wonder, what did you do in life to earn your current way of being or well-being? And I think when I came to the United States, it really struck home to me that education is such a powerful lever to addressing inequality, but especially so amongst women. And I was on a track to do my PhD in aerospace engineering, and everywhere I would look around, I would see very few women in the technical space. But also, I think broadly in society, I was just stunned by how women and girls are given very closed door messages where people would proudly say, "I don't do math," or hobbies are very, very stereotypical. Shopping options and are very there was a lot of pink, and it just got me thinking that a very wealthy country is limiting the potential of half of its population. That didn't feel right. So I started Iridescent. I left my PhD program because it just felt that aerospace engineering wasn't the path to make a big change in the world, and inequality, especially amongst women, was really a path that could make many, many, many lives better. So I changed careers, and I learned a lot about education, but I really went deep into the research to see what could be a lever that, or multiple levers that you could pull to make a real big change. And so I started Iridescent. It was called Iridescent at that time in 2006. And the key sort of levers were engage parents, because there's a ton of research to show that parents really open doors for children, especially girls. Even before the baby is born, you get all these messages, and lots of research shows, right? Like, and all the way up. And then I think role models. And so this is where the program model started to work with universities and corporations to bring industry mentors to students to show what are some possibilities. And then we really explored, like, what are the children actually learning and doing? And it was sort of hands-on, like really, really exciting projects. And I think that's how we connected through Bridget. Boeing was one of our big partners. The National Science Foundation and the U.S. Navy funded our initial experiments. And the main question to me was, how can you have large-scale change that has a deep impact, lasting impact? And at one point, we were running 14 different programs, just looking at all the data, seeing what's working, what's not. And now, 17 years down the line, we have a program that shows it really has lasting impact on a girl's identity, so much so that even if she participates in the program when she's 10, it transforms her choices in higher education and into the career. So 76% of the girls who go through our program go on to do STEM careers, and actually their leadership capabilities also change. So it's only been possible because you're stuck around for such a long time and we've learned a lot. But the model is girls work with mentors, they find a problem they care about, and then they build a technology-based solution to tackle a real-world problem over the course of 3 months. So a high dosage, very, very applied, and it has all the research-based elements that show that it changes their identity forever.
So let's talk a little bit about what Technovation looks like right now today. Numbers, countries that you're in, it's incredibly impressive. Just the first stop on your website and you get a sense of the scale of this organization and how many young girls you're touching. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, what it looks like today? And then I'd love to go back and revisit some of the themes and topics that you just talked about, because I think the journey that you've taken and what you've learned and encountered along the way is equally as important as what it looks like today.
Yeah, so of course, COVID was a big challenge, but we operate in more than 120 countries, and right now the season is open and we're looking to engage roughly 20,000 girls and about 4,000 to 5,000 mentors who connect with the girls. And over the course of 3 months, basically January, February, March, they will find a problem aligned with the UN Sustainable Development Goals and create either a mobile app or an AI-based solution and think through what is a user adoption plan, what is a business plan, what is a revenue model, and actually hopefully even develop something that can be put on the app store. So that's sort of the depth of the learning and the scale, the global scale at which the organization is. But we have even bigger ambitions, as I was saying earlier. We spent last year really working on a strategic plan for how we can do this for even more girls.
So let's back up. So if a girl's interested in Technovation and getting involved in your program, they go through your website, or how are you finding the girls and engaging them?
Yeah, so of course, yes, anybody can go to technovation.org, get started over the next couple of weeks before we close registrations. And you can basically try to find girls in your area to form a team and then connect with a mentor either online or in person, and then go through our curriculum, which is completely free online. And we also offer live classes on different Saturdays so that you can tune in and follow the whole entrepreneurship journey. But honestly, the way we have scaled globally and made the program relevant to different geographies, cultures, backgrounds, languages is through our chapter ambassadors. So we have a network of more than 120 or so chapter ambassadors. These are incredible leaders in their countries and their areas who say, we need to bring this program to girls in our area, and then they bring them together. So COVID, of course, was hard because it was virtual, but usually they meet in person, and then we have like a very, very exciting in-person pitch event, and then, of course, we have the World Summit also in person this year, so we're excited about that.
So alongside the sort of contest aspect of the programming and, you know, working in teams to problem solve and develop their app or solution, there's also an educational component to support what they're trying to achieve around this particular
Absolutely.
Project?
Yeah, and that's a good you've done your homework. I think that was a big finding because there are many competitions, but and there's a lot of sort of discussion around if you have a competition, many girls will not participate because girls are afraid of competition. And you have to dig deeper into some of that. And it's not that girls are afraid of competition, it's that every human being, regardless of their gender, will do things only if they know they'll succeed or if they have a very high degree of confidence based on prior successes. So if you want to get more girls to change their identities around technology and leadership, you have to build their capacity and show them that they're going to be successful. And so the curriculum is key to that. And there are many competitions that neglect to provide the capacity building and the training, and so they'll only support the already interested. You will never be able to broaden the pool and change the status quo. So that is something that we focus heavily on. Look at the previous data from previous years to see what are girls learning, not learning, where are they struggling, and then we adjust the curriculum the following year to cover those gaps.
So making it a competition is a deliberate choice by the organization?
Absolutely. And again, based on a lot of research, so there are basically, I call it like the four E's to self-efficacy. And the first one is exposure to role models. That's very, very well understood. That's where the mentoring comes in. Second is the experience itself. It needs to be scaffolded. It needs to be easy to start, like a very, very exciting game. Third is you need to have cheerleaders who have very high expectations of you. So this is where the parents come in. And then the last is the energy of the whole experience. So this is why just a coding bootcamp or an online program will always have 90% of them not finishing it, right? We kind of forget that we have a brain, but we are also a human body, and we make decisions based on our emotions, not really on data. We like to think we make decisions based on data, but we don't. And so the adrenaline in an experience is what really cements your identity. And that's where that's why we love sports and entertainment, right? Mm-hmm. And so for that kind of lasting cementing of this identity and the experience, you have to have some drama, some suspense, some sweaty palms and all of that. And competition is the best way to do that. It also provides an artificial milestone.
Right. And it seemed to me that there was not just one winner, that there's a couple of different categories and different ways you recognize the contribution of the different teams, which I loved.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, that's our perpetual struggle, right? Like, we want to be able to. But the other thing that we're working on is our alumna. And because we have so many alumna, we have roughly 60,000 now who are in college and
that's
in
amazing.
The workforce. So really, and we have seen, we did a big study last year, they continue to face tremendous obstacles at every step along the way. So initially we were thinking we would only focus on the K-12 space, but then we realized, okay, these young women continue to need support all along, and there isn't a global ecosystem that can support them. So we have to step into that space and make sure we are providing support along the way. So a big part of that would be to provide financial support, either in the form of scholarships or incubators, that I think we are going to step into as part of our big strategic plan as well.
Right. So I imagine what you're finding is girls are coming out of your program and they're more well-equipped or armed to have confidence in themselves and pursue these careers, but they're still facing the same barriers that
Many.
You saw. And you're saying that there's still that piece of needing to connect so that they stick with it and that they have the support and that they're able to find the funding that is so difficult for female entrepreneurs to find as is, and sort of close that gap for them so that they can get over that last hurdle.
Absolutely. And I think we have the network and the capacity and the understanding to do that. So initially I was thinking we can partner with some global VC firm or any other women-focused incubator, but it's looking more and more likely that I think we are the ones who have to do that because of our scale. And I think, and the girls trust us, and they should, so we shouldn't be handing them over and then they get dropped. So our eventual vision is to have the largest ecosystem of women tech entrepreneurs, but also women investors, because I mean, I'm sure you're familiar, there are not that many women investors, especially not in low-income countries. And we need to change that because the talent is everywhere.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think is so fascinating about what you've been able to achieve, and that is particularly interesting to me, at our firm, we think about, you know, leaving a different path, and we focus a lot on the financial services industry, but I wrestle all the time with how do you do that at scale? And that's something that you're solving for every day. And I think what's interesting about your model, and I'd love to hear from you on the topic, but it seems that the way you've involved communities and really had them take ownership in sort of a boots on the ground way of being the participants and sort of spreading the word and supporting the program. And then now you're talking about building this community of alumni who are then going to come back and hopefully support, you know, the next group and the next group. That's the scale, I imagine, and putting it in the hands of the people that are really in these communities and are going to be able to drive the change.
Absolutely. And I think that's what we are waking up to, that we hold the keys to the answer ourselves. And because we're stuck in it for so long, right? I think the community has been growing, and now it's time for us to really fuel it even more. And so a big part of our growth strategy is to support the alumni, so they're coming back as mentors, because I'll share our strategic plan for the next 15 years is to reach 25 million girls. And we are totally capable of doing that because of the huge, solid foundation we have built of experience and mistakes and all what we know doesn't work, but also what works. And a big part of what enables scale is automation and really embracing technology at all levels. You're teaching, bringing the most cutting edge technology to these girls, as well as sort of fueling our own internal systems so that we can be more productive. But I think a simple automated platform showcasing what ideas these young women have, because that's part of the competition too. They have to have a very rigorous business plan, user adoption plan, revenue model, everything, actual working prototypes. That's all ready to fund. We have 10,000 of them already. And so we can invite our alumni to come back, do a second pass, and then make it freely available like a Kickstarter platform to anybody who wants to invest. We already have a couple of alumni donating to us.
That's amazing.
At a pretty significant level. And I'm like, wow, right? So the sad part is that even after 17 years, there's still a massive gender gap in tech. And of course, in leadership, and very much so in the finance industry. So I think our lessons and our mission still remain the same.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of start to answer it. But one of my questions for you was, do you think things have gotten better since you started in the backdrop?
No. And I think last year, it was very, very interesting. Like, I've done 5 strategic plans so far, and they were always kind of done in a very by the book, right? Like, you kind of linearly scale some numbers and big hairy goals, and then every year you adjust them because you're like, they were unreachable. And I think last year, just because we have so much experience in the space, I approached it in a different way, and I was like, if we do this 20% increment, it's irrelevant, because you're not really changing the world. And so I approached it top down, like, how many girls are there in the world? And so there are roughly 900 million girls. And I started to do both a top down and a bottom up approach about what would it take to educate all, and not just educate with basic literacy, because that's what most people a lot of education programs tend to treat girls as, like, in a very condescending way, like basic primary education. Why are we talking about basic primary education when we should be saying, let's bring them the best, highest quality education that we have, right? And so just working out, like, what could Technovation scale up to within 15 years, say, and then what would it take to bring it to all? And that's where we came up with this model that's actually a pretty agile model based on our experience, based on what other nonprofits can scale, using automation, using marketing. And we can reasonably reach roughly 25 million girls over the next 15 years. And we need roughly 35 organizations like that. And then we have reached all of these girls in the world and given them very, very high quality technology, entrepreneurship. These are the skills of the 21st century, or the future ready skills, right? And so it was very, very interesting to say, like, this can be done, so why aren't we doing it? And I think it comes down to courage, where we tend to think in silos, we tend to think in country. But if you're a tech company, you want to take over the whole world. So we should think like a tech company and say, all right, have this product reach billions of users, right? And what would it take to do that across country boundaries? And so that's the plan that we are working on. And a big lever for that is automation, using things like ChatGPT to firstly teach girls how to build better technologies, but then also to be able to go faster, quicker.
Right. And there's another aspect that's so incredibly powerful and scalable, which is that these girls are often solving problems within their own communities, right? And they have the best perspective on that. And they're so many of the stories that I saw on the website or through some of the videos that Technovation shares were so inspirational, and in that these were things that had affected their lives that they wanted to solve for, and they were motivated so personally by. And they're leaving their communities changed for the better by coming up with these solutions.
Absolutely. And last year we had a chance to present at COP. And one of the interesting sort of findings that came out there was, there's a new book called Earth for All. I don't know if you've heard about it, but 50 years ago, a bunch of MIT scientists sort of worked out the planetary boundaries for us to stay within a safe world and a thriving world, and we've overshot a lot of the boundaries. And so the scientists' recommendations now are, here are 5 turnaround strategies to employ to save both the world, but also to ensure well-being for all of us. So the 5 are, number 1, eliminate poverty. Number 2, eliminate inequality. Number 3, empower women. Number 4, change our existing food systems. So go to plant-based diets, reduce food wastage. And lastly is green energy. But empower women and educate girls is the cornerstone strategy, because if you do that, all of the others will happen. And so that awareness that people have that educating girls increases economic benefits for all, health benefits for all, but also climate crises can be averted if you educate women. So if you had a dollar to spend, you should support a girl to become a leader.
I love that. The other thing that's fascinating to me about your organization and your perspective is this idea of cross-border and global. And it's really fascinating to me that the gaps around, you know, female engagement and opportunity in this particular sector exist in developed countries and not developed countries, and with no discernible sort of improvement as you have more economic opportunity. And I'm wondering sort of, what's Technovation's journey? First of all, did you start in the United States and then did you push out, or were you always a global organization? And then just piggybacking off that idea, I'd love to know sort of what the different approaches you see from these girls are based on where they're coming from, and what are the common themes, and what are the things that make them different, and how do you think about that from your seat?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I always wanted to have a large scale solution. And so we definitely started in the US first, but with our first Navy grant, we started to do stuff in Europe. And then really with our Boeing partnership, that's when we started to go global and to test what breaks and what doesn't break. But Technovation itself, there was one, it was just by chance that we hit upon this. And then it started to make so much sense that instead of asking girls, make an app on what you're interested in, switch it to find a problem in your community. And just that shift from to your own self to your community enabled the program to become locally adaptable. Because we learned the hard way in the first 3 years when girls were creating apps around what they were interested in, they were very, very stereotypical apps, because interest is really a function of media and advertising. But when you focus on your community and somebody else, then you're immediately grounding it in reality. And so that enabled us. And then, of course, that curriculum is a very broad one, where it's like, here are some technical tutorials, here's how you start a business, but you're adapting it to the local community. And a key piece there is the mentors who enable and provide that customized support to the girl to say, let's apply it to this particular problem. That is also a bottleneck for scale. And so there are, I think, roughly 43,000 public corporations in the world. There are about 15,000 universities in the world. So there is room, but it is a bottleneck. And I think this is where our alumna coming back into the system as mentors is the way to provide that personalized support to communities. So I think that's what we learned, that sometimes a lot of our education organizations spend too much time thinking about local, customization, adaptable, and you can err on the wrong side there sometimes. And sometimes you just have to get the right pillar, and in our case it was get the prompt right. And it can be a natural part of the whole experience to make it locally customizable. And so over the years, we found, I think this is one problem other competitions have, where more resource teams can do better. In our case, we thankfully didn't find that, and it wasn't intentional. Again, it was a happy sort of finding that the girls from low-income countries tend to pick problems that are very big and not first world problems. And so they would typically win the competition because, again, of our prompt, find a problem in your community and a big was, do many people have this problem? And so this was amazing to see that you can have somewhat of a level playing field by how you engineer the competition. One of my favorite apps was created by a team of three girls. Two of them were orphans in an orphanage in India, and they created an app to help, it was called Bataan, to keep the orphans' information safe, but also transferable between one orphanage and the other, because many times there was no paper trail, they didn't have a birth date, but all of this could be kept in their app and their account. So that's an amazing example of empowerment.
So how do girls like that who are involved in this competition and are coming from, you know, situations of poverty have access to the technology to participate?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think usually we find it through the chapter ambassadors, and they partner with organizations. So it doesn't mean like just because if it's a low income community doesn't mean that they don't have access to technology. They may not have it in the school system, but they could be a nonprofit organization that has. And so we partner with those organizations. So it's not a large scale adoption plan, because that can only happen when the public school systems begin to have technology and devices, which we are still far away from. But it doesn't prevent us from working in these communities, because there are plenty of organizations that, even in refugee camps, right? Like there are laptops and internet and access to devices.
And what areas of the world are you seeing the fastest growth for technovation of participation?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So I think the two countries that are just very, very interesting, or three countries, two are supported by the government. Entrepreneurship and computer science education are specifically supported by the government. So Spain and Chile are the two countries where it's a real government priority. And we see that. We see that at every level. And then Canada is another very, very interesting example where, thanks to the efforts of our global ambassador, she wanted to bring, she's formerly from Canada, but to every sort of province across Canada, and formed a partnership with universities. But it's also because the government provides quite a bit of funding and support to these universities to be able to do that. So I think in those kinds of cases where there is a government mandate, things grow faster. And that has been something interesting to see.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. So Tara, let me ask you this. If you look back from 2006 to where you are today, what has been the most surprising things for you about this journey? And I'd love for you to talk a little bit, because I know that there's a lot of people listening, and we're hoping to reach a lot of people out there who have big ideas, who want to change the world and aren't sure sort of what's that step one, and need to understand that you're going to hit days when it doesn't seem possible, and there's going to be challenges to overcome. I'd love to hear just kind of a little bit more from you on the personal side of the journey of building this, and I'm sure living and dying and breathing this every day to where you've gotten to today.
Yeah, I think the big sort of insight was that many times Silicon Valley gets it wrong, where this kind of idea of within 2 or 3 years, you should have a lot of success. And over time, watching a lot of, I live in Silicon Valley, I'm pretty closely associated, we get most of our funding from the tech industry. But what I learned was that if you don't pick the problem carefully, what will happen is if it's too easy of a problem, you'll get bored of it very quickly. And if it's a big problem, if it's a big complex problem, guess what? It's going to take you decades to understand it. And so in either case, so if you're picking an easy problem or a relatively narrowly defined problem, you'll hit a ceiling pretty quickly. And maybe success is an exit strategy or a certain amount of scale. And room for innovation, you may have just gotten lucky in many ways, right? Like it's a simple idea, simple solution, go viral very quickly. But then what happens after? You lose interest as the founder and leader because it's not a very rich substrate to even sustain too much life on. But if it's a very complex problem, and I think social problems are complex, and I see this all the time in the ed tech space that people go in very quickly, here's a new technology, we've got to give it to all the kids. And without deeply understanding learning or motivation or how the brain works or how people work, it's just going to be, it's not going to last that long. And so you have to be in it for the very long haul. And I think in the early years, I just felt underconfident and looking around and saying, okay, well, I'm not moving as fast as others. And you can make these artificial plans that say, here are the big numbers we are going for. But if you don't understand the problem, you're just going to end up doggy paddling a lot of the time. And so I'm stunned at how long it has taken me to understand the space. And even then, I can't claim. But I don't know. I mean, there is value. This is like a typical middle-aged person talking, right? There's a tremendous value in young people having. I had so much arrogance. If you don't have confidence in yourself and a certain degree of arrogance, you're not going to jump in and do things. So I don't know. I think the older me, I don't know what the older me will say to the younger me. I'm like, just keep doing it.
No, I love you. There's no substitute for time. I think that that's absolutely right. You have to just keep plugging away. I've found that in my own career. So just bring it back closer to home again. What do you think needs to happen within the United States and within Silicon Valley to really start to make a dent in some of these gender disparities? And I think about this all the time because we have conversations, you know, with corporates that have such an authentic commitment to wanting things to be different. And yet we see the same statistics year after year that aren't really moving. And the conversation right now doesn't seem to match the numbers. It feels like there is a real sort of energy about wanting things to be different, about wanting to close some of these gaps. And I wonder from your seat what you see and what you think needs to happen.
I think just straight up courage and picking a program that has research. So I'll say Technovation is the only program that has a strong research foundation to show that it's working. And the reason is it has long-term impact, right? Because we have so much data to show that. So pick a program that has that kind of long-term impact and then just invest in it. We know that in 15 years, we will be able to reach 25 million girls, but it'll cost 700 million. And to have that, but to also think about it, is like corporations tend to have no strategy. They just throw money around everywhere depending on what their shareholders want, what the market wants. And so if you really care about something, then invest in it for at least a good 5 years. And if you think about it, the cost of recruiting and having like a DEI kind of team, all of that, advertising, right? Like, invest in a pipeline and say in 5 years we will be able to hire all these young women and bring them into our workforce, and they have all the skills we want. They are innovative, creative, bold tech developers, and it doesn't cost that much. It's way less than your traditional recruiting costs. So I think it's having a holistic viewpoint where what is our marketing budget, our recruiting budget, our whatever, our foundation, and connect them and say, here's, we're going to pool all the funding and invest. But that requires courage to say, we're going to say no to all of these options and then put all our eggs into one basket. But without that kind of courage, we will not make progress.
So I want to make sure that everybody who's hearing this story knows how to get involved. And certainly we've talked a little bit about how the girls themselves can get involved and build teams and participate. And mentorship is obviously a hallmark and a really, really important piece of the puzzle. And that's a way to get involved. And then funding, right? Corporate sponsorships, individual sponsorships, just making sure people are putting their money towards an organization that is really driving results and is research driven, as you said. Am I missing anything? How else do you think about getting people involved?
No, you did your homework again. Yeah. So I think one stat that we have is that when teams are connected with mentors, they're almost 90% guaranteed to finish, which is an incredible number, to show the power of your sort of sharing of your skills and expertise. But it comes at a price. It comes with a lot of time. I've been a mentor for almost 7 years now, and it's the hardest thing I do, but I do it every year because it's the most rewarding thing. I think the other thing I would say in terms of funding, I think, again, like I would say, if you want to invest in your future, in your child's future, in the planet, the best investment you can make is in a girls' education organization, because there's Project Drawdown has a list of 90 strategies to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. Electric vehicles are number 19 on that list. Recycling is number 47 on that list. Educating girls is number 4 on that list. So even ahead of planting forests and trees. So thinking about being very intentional in where you spend your time, where you spend your money, because guess what? Your children or even you yourself are going to experience climate change. And so this is the best way to protect our future and the planet.
So we're almost out of time, but I wanted to wrap up with kind of a fun question and just ask you, what are some of your favorite projects and apps that you've seen come out? I know you mentioned one earlier in the podcast, which was so cool, but we'd love to hear about others.
It changes every minute. One of my favorite ones has been a team from Ukraine. They participated last year. They created an incredible app to support refugee children move across the border. Three of the girls themselves are refugees, but they continue to build the app. They've launched their nonprofit organization. It's called Sweet. I'm not saying it right, but it means light. And I'm in touch with the girls, and I'm always awed and inspired by their courage. Their families, their fathers and brothers are back fighting, and they want to make a change as being women and being tech leaders. So that's one story. Just so many. Another one is a very cool one. This girl from the Côte d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast, she made an app where people can buy African prints, like inspired fitness apparel, because she's like African girls. They don't have anything, and there's sort of some embarrassment about sweating, and so some really, really beautiful fitness clothes, right, that to get girls excited about exercising. So very wide range. I could go on and on and on.
I love it. Thank you for sharing those stories with us, and thank you for coming on and talking about Technovation. Thank you for what you're doing, which is absolutely changing the world. It's made us here incredibly hopeful. And I'm hoping that some of our listeners do get involved in this very important initiative. So keep us posted. Absolutely. We'll be watching.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tara.